If you're sick of having to wade through 2 hours of fluff in order to get a few good takeaways, tune into the Art of Manliness podcast. We glean and distill the very best insights from the world's experts in self-improvement, philosophy, practical skills, history, and more. And we do so in under an hour without the eye-roll-inducing filler. You walk away from every episode of the Art of Manliness podcast with actionable insights you could start implementing today in order to improve your life. Check out great episodes that I enjoy, like the cues that make you more charismatic and how to avoid death by comfort. Available wherever you get your podcast on your favorite podcast player. Of course, if you want to improve your life, listen to the Art of Manliness podcast today. Indulge in the past with History on the Rocks, the podcast that brings you the fascinating tales of lesser-known history while you get ready for the weekend with your favorite drink in hand. Join Cody and Audrey as they uncork the stories that time forgot. From famous people like George Washington and his distillery to pirate queens causing mayhem on the high seas, each episode is a journey through the ages with endless possibilities. Give us a follow on Facebook and Instagram to keep up with the news about the latest episodes. So grab a glass, enjoy, relax, and join us every Thursday for History on the Rocks, the History on the Rocks podcast, where you'll learn about the past while sipping in the present. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcast. That's History on the Rocks. Learn about the past while sipping in the present.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
What's up, guys? It's the phenomenal AJ Styles. You're listening to the two-man power trip.
Hey, Johnny. Cool, man. What's going on? We ready to go or what?
And welcome to the two-man power trip of wrestling. My host, JP John Posworth, with a very special guest, former tag team champion in the Pacific Northwest, former tag team champion in NWA Florida. He is Mr. Jerry Gray, the Golden Boy. Welcome to the two-man power trip. How you doing?
Hi, good to be here. Thanks. I've heard a lot about you, and I'm glad to be on with you today.
What's going on in your world? What have you been up to?
I'm just fighting these health issues for the main thing. It's been about 10 years going on. Seems like every time I'm getting cleared up a little, something else hits me.
So how you doing physically? You doing okay now or better or no?
Like I said, it just keeps coming up different stuff. Like right when I think I'm getting a little better now, diabetes hit me for like really bad. I was in the hospital for like a week. My sugar was like 800. I never heard of it being that high before.
Wow, that is but, high, yeah.
Yeah, they had to put me in the hospital for so high, you know, get me under control. And then I had... there's so much stuff. I couldn't even list all the stuff. It's been every year I've been in the hospital for the last year for at least a week each time.
Wow. So crazy.
It's like pretty much being there mainly.
Man, that stinks. Sorry to hear that. It's terrible to go through all that kind of stuff, being in the hospital, you know, that much.
Oh yeah. It's bad. I moved to Ohio and everything because I heard the, you know, the hospitals and all the treatment and stuff like that's a lot better up here, but it was at first, but seemed like the same stuff everywhere pretty much.
Yep, for sure. Now, do you keep up with wrestling these days or not so much anymore?
I don't watch the newer, like about everybody, probably you talk to the older guys. I don't like the newer wrestling, but I still watch all the, you know, I have a lot of DVDs and YouTube and all that to watch the old stuff on. I definitely keep up with all that.
What are you watching?
Well, I watch anything I can find, like the old Georgia wrestling, you know, Mid-Atlantic. There's not too much Northwest on there, but I have a little bit. And then I love Mid-Atlantic, like 78, 79, 80. And when I was there in 80 through 82, I think it was 83, I was there. And pretty much all the places I've been to, Florida, I like to watch all the old Florida ones.
When you say Pacific Northwest, there's not a lot of stuff out there on that, right? There's not a lot of Pacific Northwest.
No, I have about the only one. It's just because one of the fans out there made me a tape of all the matches he had of mine. But I can't even find that right now because I moved up here and there's a big mess everywhere.
Where did he get it from? He just taped it off the TV?
There's a guy out there that people know, like on the websites and stuff. Buddy Rose, I think, gave it to him because I remember going over to Buddy Rose's house a lot. We'd go over there after the matches, and he'd had a big screen TV back then. That was pretty uncommon, you know, like 84, 85. And he had a big VCR, you know, a whole tape of a studio and everything. And then, so I think I heard Buddy Rose gave him a lot of his collection. I'm not sure if that's true or not. I can't remember the guy's name either.
I was talking to your former tag team partner and tag team champion for the Pacific Northwest, Dr. Tom Pritchard. He was saying that a lot of those tapes, only Buddy Rose had it because he was taping the TV because Don Owen just kept recycling and you know, taping over the old tapes.
Like a lot of them did. A lot of the promoters did that back then because it cost so much, I guess, for the new tapes each week. I can't believe it cost.
Who knew, though, right? Who knew that it was going to be worth so much money in the future?
Yeah, some people were pretty smart, like, who was it? Paul Bosch, I guess, saved a lot of his. I don't know who has it, but somebody has a lot of Paul Bosch's stuff. He taped in Houston there, so he knew something.
You know who actually has it? Billy Corgan, the Smashing Pumpkins singer.
Oh, he bought it from Bruce.
Yeah.
Didn't he? Yeah, Bruce thought, yeah.
Yes.
I knew Bruce had it for a long time, but yeah, that's pretty good footage, too. I seen a little bit on there. I don't know if that... Bull Curry, Johnny Valentine matches from there. I've seen that match on there. It was real good quality.
I think he had a Harley Race Andre match too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that's right. I did see a couple of those somewhere. It might have been on YouTube. YouTube's not showing quite as much lately as like they were before, though, for some reason. They want you to buy everything, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately. What did you think of Dr. Tom, by the way, in the old Pacific Northwest? Party animal or what?
He was great. I don't know about his driving either. He must have been a good driver when I was with him because I think I was worse than him. He was always complaining about me, my driver. But, I remember he must have forgot about that wreck because I think he had just come back from when I first got out there to Oregon. I think Tom had just had a wreck with Mike Bornward. Tom was driving off the side of the road and hit a car that was parked. I don't know which way it happened, but I know Tom hit the car that was on the side of the road.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I didn't hear that one when you guys talked. I was thinking he must have forgot about that one. That was before anybody was even in the business. I wasn't with him, but I heard it was pretty rough. I mean, hit somebody right on the side of the road at nighttime when they were parked. But anyway, we had a lot of fun out there, though, definitely. I learned a lot from Tom, too. He'd already been wrestling a couple of years before me. Yeah, that was a good place to learn, definitely, because they were learning themselves pretty much, like people like Barry, what's his name? Barry Owen, Don Owen's son. Mm-hmm. He was trying to learn himself, so we were pretty much teaching him. He didn't know too much. But and Don wasn't going to any of the shows at that time except for the Portland Saturday night. And then they had it once every – that was a real – I can't believe they got that many fans to come in twice a month. It was like I think every other Tuesday and then every Saturday in that same building. It was like the same building, I guess, five times a month. 2, 3, something like that, whatever it was. But it was, I mean, a lot to go to the same building. And usually they were all sold out.
Pretty good.
Crazy. Yeah, it was crazy because they got to see the same matches pretty much. No, they didn't get to see the ones. That's what, how they got them. They didn't get to see the ones on Tuesday, the Portland specials. They didn't get to see those. They had to pay for that one. It was pretty much the same matches, though.
How'd you get in to Portland? Like, when you get there, I guess it's 84-ish, but how did you actually get recruited into Portland?
Oh, Portland? Yeah, that's funny because it's a big guy that's in the news right now, Billy Jack. He asked me if I wanted to go out there when he was in Florida. He was just driving down the road, too. We didn't even talk in the dressing room. He was driving on the side of the road, and I had a Cadillac then, a big Fleetwood, looked like a limousine, and my hair bleached and everything, and Billy was with, what's Billy Jack's? I mean, Billy, what's the other guy? Chris Von Erich's, was it? It wasn't his wife, I guess, right? Jeannie? Is that the right one?
Oh, Chris Adams?
Yeah. Was that his girlfriend?
Yeah.
Okay. Because I used to say it was his wife. But anyway, she was with Billy Jack at that time when they were on the, well, you know, they were driving next to me on the highway, actually. We just got done wrestling in St. Petersburg, Florida, Bayfront Center. And I didn't even talk to him in the dressing room or nothing. So he's just driving beside me on the road. And he goes, hey, you look good, man. You want to go to Portland? I was like, sure. On the side of the road. Yeah. I mean, not even pulled over, just driving on the side of the road talking like this. So then eventually we finally talked in the dressing room, of course. But he was just like, kept asking me the whole time. Every time he'd see me, you want to go to Portland? They never seen nothing like you out there. And I was like, yeah, sure. I heard it was good and everything out there. But then he sent me out there. But he wasn't even there yet. I guess he was always coming in and out of there, you know, going to WWE and then coming back to Portland. He's in and out all the time. I didn't know that, though, so I got there. And Don Owens had been told to push me to the top, you know. So I got there, and I wasn't complaining about nothing. I was happy to be there, but I guess, who was it? Buddy Rose was mad because I was on the top matches already, and I guess Billy... Jack had been telling him, you know, get this guy on the, I told him I was setting him out there at the top, not the middle or bottom or something. So then he got me in a thing with him. They always were fighting there over the booker position. There were never really was a booker until Matt Bourne got there years later. Not Matt Bourne, what's his name? The grappler, they get me to confuse him too.
Oh, Len
Denton. Yeah, yeah. Len Denton was the only first official booker. I mean, anybody even called a booker. There was nobody called booker when I was there. But when I got there, Buddy Rose was just then getting Don's ear again. Sorry, I haven't had a problem with my throat lately, too. And so Buddy told me that he's going to get Don to do an angle with me and Buddy on the, what's they call them? The Mike Miller and Mr. Ebony. What's his name? Rip Oliver's Express, yeah, the Express. Now I had a few members at that time, but he wasn't even, you know, Oliver was there too, so I don't know how Buddy, I guess Buddy was just coming back from New York or something, but Buddy was getting in again, the top of Don, you know, Don's position this year. So I didn't know that, so I was getting heat with Rip already at the beginning, because Buddy's getting me to be the top guy with him again. So anyway, Tom was there. That's funny. The first match I had there actually was. I had the first match there. It was just against Jimmy Offie or something. That was my first show there. And then the second week they hit me hot, boy. They said, Billy Jack wants them in here on top. He don't want doing the matches like that. And then, so I got me and Buddy Rose against Tom Pritchard and Hack Sawyer for the tag team belts. My second shot in there. You know how they did the three fall matches back then?
Yep.
So it was three fall matches. And I made a real good match, too. We had a real good two out of three fall match. And I didn't know. Nobody was happy except for Rip Oliver and whatchamacallit, because they didn't get the match that week. But I wasn't worried about it. So anyway, that's when I first met Tom. And then Hack Sawyer, he was complaining about the finish, what we were going to do on him. The one where, who made that? I think it was Dick Slater and Bob Orton Jr. did it. They would, Orton would hand his opponent to Slater, like on a power slam, he'd jump off the top with it.
Yep.
That was that was like big time for back then.
Yeah, oh yeah, awesome.
You know, so we did that, and Hack Sawyer's come on the ring when I was jumping off with it. He was like, "You guys know what the hell you're doing." I'm like, "Jesus, calm down."
What did you think of Billy Jack Haynes, by the way? Just ask you about that before we continue on. Just because I was just curious, like, was he crazy? I mean, obviously, we know the story. It now killed his wife.
Yeah.
What did you think about Billy Jack?
I was around him a lot, and he did some crazy stuff. I had to pull him off fans a couple of times. He, anytime somebody would ask how to get into wrestling, I mean, it could be a nice guy, you know, just quiet, red country guy. I was standing there, and he goes, "How do I get in wrestling, guys?" All nice and everything. And Billy grabbed him in a full Nelson and started banging his head on the wall. Wouldn't have nobody watching, really, but it was like right by the dressing room, you know. And I'm just like, calm down, man. Let him go. Jesus Christ. Blood's coming out everywhere. And I'm like, all he did was ask how to get in wrestling. He didn't even say anything smart or anything. And Billy just started pounding his head on the wall with the full Nelson, too.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so I was like, I seen him do that a few times. And then the girls, especially, he used to always say mean stuff to girls. I'd be like, jeez, can't believe he's, you know, talking like this.
A little wacky.
Yeah. I didn't know he was wacky as he was, though. But he started getting even worse then, though, out there in Oregon. He'd be like, I don't know how far you go on these shows. I've listened to a lot of them. But does Tom have a weekly show with you still, or was that something?
Yeah.
Oh, does he? Okay. Does he ever talk about any of the stories from? I noticed that he didn't really just talk too much when I was listening about like the.
Sometimes, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Crazy stuff. But anyway, Billy would get kind of mad during that type of stuff afterwards, parties with the wrestlers and, you know, the wrestling fans and stuff. Lady fans, whatever you want to call them.
Yep.
Yeah, he would get kind of mad at that time of the night for some reason. He'd leave them. Hotel or whatever it was, usually I never could figure that out. Yeah, so
did you think? I mean, not do you ever think somebody's going to kill somebody or something like that? But
no,
were you surprised at all? Because I've asked some guys and they're like, I wasn't surprised when they heard about Billy Jack. I'm like, wow, weren't surprised. That's kind of like a damning thing to say about somebody, you know what I mean? Why I wasn't surprised when I heard it.
It would surprise me if it wasn't for money or something, but it's just for to do it. I wouldn't go that far, like, because he. I don't know. The stuff I'm hearing now, I never would think anything of it back in those days because he knew I smoked weed, you know.
Yeah.
And a lot of the guys did a lot of other stuff stronger than that, too, but I'm not going to say anything unless somebody else has already said it. But anyway,
right.
You know, I don't know how far they've gone, but I remember smoking weed. I'd tell Billy that I'd just sit there and he'd tell jokes. And they weren't even good jokes, but they were funny just because the way he told them, you know. Yeah, he had a way to tell them. I don't know what it was, but they were really, nobody else could tell it. There's no way. But then he'd tell jokes and we'd all be smoking my weed and everything. And then he'd go, I'd smoke weed after I retire with like $1 million on the beach and then I'll finally smoke weed. He said he did it before, but he don't want to yet or something. But that's why I couldn't believe when the story about him saying he sold cocaine back then too, didn't he? He would say like the 80s, 85 and all that.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, that's what I really was like. He knew me more than anybody that he could be as good contact. But I did hear him one time. Everybody's gone now. I got not many more witnesses left except me and Billy Jack. But one time after the Portland, what's it called, 60th anniversary show where they had the like 12,000 people. Well, I guess Billy and Buddy Rose were both getting real big payoffs. I forget how much it was, 10 grand or something. I don't know how much it was, but I know Billy Jack was asking for 10 grand from Billy, from Buddy Rose that night. And he was asking him pretty, you know, Buddy Rose wasn't a fighter and he didn't want to fight, definitely, especially Billy Jack. So anyway, Billy was going, give me that 10 grand, buddy. It was just me and I don't know if you ever seen the Portland Sports Arena, but it wasn't really big. It was like a bowling alley. That's what it was. So it was like I guess it would have been the place where people put their shoes on and stuff, and then there was a small dresser and really we both had to rest on the same area pretty much, but the fans thought we were all going back to a dressing room with 10 cops holding you back or something. So anyway, he's asking for 60 grand or not 60 grand, 10 grand is why I kept thinking they must have got a lot of money because 10 grand that's a lot. And then he goes, this is 1984 or 85 or whatever, and Billy was just mumbling like saying he didn't have it right now and all this, and Billy was getting really mad. So Buddy had to get out of there quick as he could, but that's what I heard. And it seemed like he owed Buddy Rose some money to me. It looked like it was right after he had some money coming. So that's the only thing I ever seen at all that looked like it could have been over drug deal or something, you know?
So nothing shady or crazy, because, you know, he claims he was working for the Clintons at one point. He claimed he was a drug dealer. He's a bodyguard. He's a hitman. I mean, he had a lot of claims throughout the years.
Yeah, that's why I said I don't know about those times. Does he say that that's like during 84 and 85 that he did any of that stuff?
He was even saying he was doing it all through his career. And then when he got to WWF, he never stopped doing it. He was still working, you know, as a hitman and all this other stuff.
You know, he couldn't. He wouldn't have had time to do any of that stuff the way we worked every night. I mean, unless he came in there just for one shot or something in Portland, and then there's no way. We were on the, I mean, once you were there, no matter who it was, they worked pretty much every show for Flair, whoever it was. So I don't know how he had time to do all that. But he did get a little, when I was with him and when he was in WWF, he changed a lot then in a short period of time, you know. That only been maybe like 1-2 years or whatever. 80s, a year and a half maybe, since I'd seen him. And he knew me good. I mean, good enough to send me to Portland and everything else. So did my phone make it worse? That wasn't my phone beeping, was it? Okay. Okay, yeah. What did I just say? Sorry about that.
Well, with Billy, though, and him saying he changed a lot at WWF.
Yeah, one time.
Interesting. He was saying that he did something, I think it was the Boys in the Tracks or some story that he was basically saying he was involved with some murder. But if you look up his like wrestlingography or whatever, like he wasn't even in that part of the country. He was wrestling in another part of the country that day.
So yeah.
He might have been telling some tall tales.
That's why I said there's no way he had time to do that. Even in Memphis, he was going on all the shows. I've seen old tapes where he was going every night, you know, all the TV, I mean, all the road shows during the week. I think he did like for like a 6 months or a year there, I think, in Tennessee, didn't he?
Yeah, it's almost like he's creating a like another gimmick for himself. Like, I did this, I did that. And maybe he's a little crazy, but some of it doesn't sound like it adds up.
Yeah, something's weird because he was all professional and during the wrestling times. I mean, he knew when wrestling time was talk for the fans to come to the arena tonight. You know, he didn't ever get into no weird stories when he did interviews like that then, you know, because they'd have him like at home during the Portland 60th anniversary. They did a lot of showing Don Owens at home, how he made all his money and turkeys or whatever. And then it showed Billy at home with Billy, Bobby Jaggers too. And he didn't act like any more weird besides putting, he had a thing about putting Vicks inhalers up his nose for some reason. He always did that back then, Billy Jack. That might be the cocaine thing. They might think that's cocaine. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that's where that's coming from.
He was addicted to that, definitely. Jeez, he did it all the time. Yeah, but anyway, we did a lot of fun stuff out there. Oregon was about the funnest territory, I think. Some people say Pensacola, but I didn't work there quite as long as I did Portland, like a year and a half. So I was there a lot to see a lot of the fun.
Portland good pay or no?
For the time you had to put, the road was the shortest territory. I mean, the smallest miles you had to go or anything. As far as like the money you spent, it was one of the best, because there was no stress. Like, you didn't have to be like drive 5 hours tomorrow. Like, I worked Mid-South two times, two different 6 month tours that time. Oh my God, that was the worst one.
I was gonna say that was terrible, right? Just traveling from Mid-South.
Yeah, it was really bad. And it was like, and then nothing else. Everything else was glory after that, though. Gravy, you know, after you went to Mid-South. And then Florida would be great everywhere. It'd be great after that, after Mid-South. But Oregon was probably the easiest besides Pensacola. They had a couple long ones in, I think it was Birmingham and stuff like that, though. They were kind of long.
What's the hotel in Portland or in the area that was like the big party
place? Oh, God. I lived there for like over a year. The Bomber. The Bomber.
Yeah. That place.
I went there back in 97 once just to even see it. And I said, yeah, it's still here. That's when Jesse Ventura was getting on Biography and everything. Yeah. I said, he lived in number 11 or something. I was like, yeah, I know. I lived here too. But anyway, yeah, it was still there. It was like the dumpiest motels I ever stayed in, probably. I don't think it even had air conditioning. Well, one of the rooms might have had air. I think I finally somehow I pulled it off where I got it from Doug Summers, the only room that had air conditioning. Even Tom Pritchard had air conditioning. He'd already been there for like 6 months before I got there. He was next to me.
I guess that's where the wrestlers stay, right? I mean, that's just a place where they stay.
Yeah, not all of them, but usually a lot of them lived there for years. And then Buddy Rose had a big house and everything, but he'd come over. That was his place to escape, you know? But it was a motel, too. Like, it was only like $75 a week, but that's 1984. It really wasn't that cheaper. I mean, the place it was, I mean, it wasn't really nothing fancy, definitely. Especially having no air conditioning.
Yeah,
A lot of the rooms. It was just like a cabin, pretty much. Looked like a fishing cabin or something.
And a big party place for the boys.
Oh, my God. You wouldn't believe it. On Saturday night or any night Portland ran, girls would, it was like a circle. It was made like in a circle, a horseshoe like. No, like a circle, I guess. Yeah, I went around in a circle. And the girls would circle all night long. It was like a movie or something. What's that movie called? I can't even remember the name of it. All our old movies, Ron Howard. Anyway, where they're all driving around, like in the street and stuff, and all the girls are looking for the guys and stuff. That's what it was like.
Graffiti.
Yeah, that one picture. One where it shows Susan Summers is why I remember that. And then all the girls were driving by looking in which rooms the door was open where they wanted you to come in or whatever.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I've never seen that anywhere else. I mean, not like that, where you could just choose, like, just open your door with it, pretty much. We almost knocked the whole thing down one night. That's Tom got the story on that one, too. He don't ever remember that. For some reason, Tom never remembers the story where we almost destroyed the bomber. It was like, I think I started the whole thing, really, pretty much.
He's got somehow a fuzzy memory. He's probably smoking too much.
No, he's starting to remember. I heard some of the stuff he was saying. Some of the different drugs that were introduced there, like mescaline and all that kind of
crap. Yeah,
oh my God. Like, we couldn't stop laughing. I was like, oh my God, what is this crap? I don't want to know her again. If I ever come down from this, I don't ever want to be here again. Anyway, yeah, the one night some girl got mad at me. You'd have girls that want to stay with you in your room, you know, for a while. And then usually they knew it was time for them to leave once you started going wrestling somewhere, you know. The next day I got to go to, you know, Seattle or something, you know. You're not going to stay here, are you? You don't live here with me or nothing. So sometimes they think they do live here there with you. So this girl, we forgot that I had one at my room, and then we took some girl from a bar back to my room, but then we realized, oh, you got Tom Pritchard was with, I mean, Mondo Guerrero was with us. And Mondo goes, oh, you have that other girl with you, Tracy. And I go, oh, shit. And then, Tom lived right next to me, number two. So I go, oh, would you take her in your room? And then I'll come over after a little while. And Tom's, yeah, okay, whatever. He didn't care. And then next thing, you know, Mondo Guerrero is bringing the girl over to my room. My girlfriend, right?
Yeah, passing her around. Passing
her
around your girlfriend.
Yeah, what a nice girl. I was like, that's the wrong girl. That's the one you're trying to get. Oh my God. So then she went crazy. She got so mad. They started fighting outside the bomber. Everybody, all the wrestlers. It was the biggest mess ever. All the wrestlers, a lot of the wrestlers' wives lived there with some of the wrestlers too. So like Mike Miller and his wife lived there somewhere down all the hills, pretty much down the other side. And then they all started going to get my girl started going and getting the other wrestlers' wives to come save her, you know? So it was a big, oh my God. I think the cops came out, everything, and then somebody busted somebody's window out of their car. I can't even remember the rest of it, but I remember it was me, Tom, and Mondo over in my room after the girl had destroyed everything. All kinds of glass land everywhere. And I was just laughing. That was one night.
All Dr. Tom's fault.
Well, the girl threw up all over his room, so he got the worst part of it. He don't even remember that. He said it was a dog that threw up at his room, but Hack Sawyer's dog, but it was the girl that I was looking at. It must have happened twice. I don't know. It must have happened a couple times. But anyway, yeah, the bomber was the most famous place for, I don't like to call them bad names, but some of them weren't rats.
The rats, yeah. Yep.
Some of them were. There really were some. Looked like, you know, I heard Tart Percy Pringle say some of them look like they just crawled out of beneath the gutter and the last things you ever seen. But he said, but some of them were sweet things.
Nice. Yes.
Oh, my God.
You mentioned Billy Jack before about WWF. Like, you guys were kind of, you know.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
But how did you get to WWF? Like, was that because of Billy Jack, or you were just kind of booked anyway?
I just knew all the guys pretty much from all the years being everywhere else, Mid-Atlantic and all the stuff. And then I pretty much just went down there and talked to Jerry Briscoe. He was pretty big in then and doing like the road agent stuff and everything. I think it was 87. I just thought all I did was go down there to see some of the guys pretty much.
Jake, do you remember who you were?
They wanted me for a bunch of matches. After they see me work first, they act like they didn't need anybody. And then Oliver Humperdinck said, he's a hell of a worker. And then Terry Garvin was just like, yeah, we got a whole bunch of them around here. And then he was like, he's a hell of a fucking worker. Hell of a. He started yelling at him. I was like, Jesus, can he get fired over me? And then he said, all right, we'll put him on the first day. And then they wanted me for every show they had in Florida. I was like, yeah, I thought you didn't want me. And then, but it was the first match was against me and Lanny Poffo against, God, what was his name? The toughest guy at wrestling, Ming. Ming and Tonga.
Haku. Yep.
Yeah, I knew him from early, too.
Yeah.
I knew him from early because when Eddie Graham, I wanted to be a wrestler, you know, he was like Eddie Graham's, you know, shooter guy to beat young guys up. And I had just broke in with the biggest opposition ever, Louis Tillette. Louis Tillette came in to try to take over Florida in like 1980 pretty much. And he had Austin Idol when Idol was hot and off TBS. He had Jimmy Valiant, Thunderbolt Patterson, a bunch of guys that were still not too old, you know, to be top names. And he had TVs, the main thing. And Eddie Graham found out that I was started with him first, you know. And Eddie Graham hated anybody, outlaw wrestling.
Yeah.
So he told Mingata, or Ming, he had somebody, he was Tong then, just King Tong. No, King Kong Tonga. That's what he got the name. He had a lot of different names. King Kong Tonga. And he was in good shape. I mean, abs, everything. Big, too. I mean, and then he wasn't that tall, but he was just huge. And then he could do it even when he got to be big, though. The drop kick, you right when, you know, when you're standing straight up on the top of your head. No matter how big he got, he could still do that. So anyway, Eddie, I didn't know all these stories either about how he could kill people and bite their nose off and all that.
Yeah.
So I was like, yeah, I didn't know all this stuff. Right, I'm sitting there, a young kid, 18 years old, and I'd already wrestled a few times. And then, but I wanted to go to Eddie Graham, you know, that's where I was from. So I wanted to go to the big stuff. Eddie Graham walks up to me. I was only like I said, 18, and felt pretty good and everything. I wrestled amateur, and he comes up to me and he goes, oh, you look good. How old are you? 18. Oh, wow. He really liked me at first. They said, who trained you? I said, Louis Tillette. And he goes, that's the guy that started all that stuff against him, you know, just like a month before this happened. Right. And he's like, I can't believe a guy like that, how good has his business been to him, could turn on the business. And, you know, and I said, and then I went and asked him, how did he turn on the business? So he didn't like that at all.
Right, yeah.
I was like, well, how did he, though? It was just like, I mean, I didn't understand how did he turn on the business, because all he did was have the same shows he had. Stars, you know, they didn't have like no weird, you know, exposés or nothing like that. So I just asked him real quick. I knew not that was the wrong way to ask him when he gave me that response. He just looked at me like, how did he hurt the business? He could tell he got real mad. And he goes, he started whispering to the referee, whoever that was, I can't even remember, to, you know, changes the match a little bit. So it was going to be with me shining real good and all this stuff going to happen. And then he changed it a little bit. They got Tonga, got him to be my opponent. And then he did everything, and I didn't even understand. I thought I was stiff because that's the way Louis Tillette trained us. I would ask him, how do you do a forearm, and he would crack your jaw. I mean, it was like he was from the old school. Louis Tillette, you never heard of him from? He was big.
Yeah.
And he was a booker a lot, mainly too. So anyway, he gave you a forearm, he gave you a crack your jaw, and then I thought that's the way it was. So I was hitting Tonga like that. So he was.
How did Tonga think about that? What did he think?
Oh, he just did every move you could think of at wrestling to kill somebody.
Was this before. Was he legit tough? I mean, you hear all the stories he was. I mean, is that actually factual?
Yeah, I remember him talking about that. He bit somebody else's nose. He bit another nose off before the one that's so famous and somewhere up north, right?
Yep.
Where was it at? Maryland or somewhere? The famous one?
It was northeast. I don't remember exactly where. I know it was northeast.
Okay, because I was riding with him, I remember, in 19... I wasn't scared of him for some reason. I don't know. I was just so young or something. Even after that beating he gave me, because that was before the matches. That was like a try, like a just to see how you do. You know, I couldn't figure out because I had already had the match booked. You know, with Eddie Graham, Dory Funk was the booker and everything. And I was like, so what the hell is this about? I thought I already had the match coming up anyway with somebody else. It was Avalanche Tyler. But then he wanted to do the little thing to see how tough I was, I guess. I guess I passed because I went back to him. I said, when's my next match? To Eddie Graham. He just looked at me like I was crazy. Like after Tonga, I mean, pushing him too to where he don't even want to do this match anyway because he could get hurt, you know, Tonga.
They don't know who I am. In WWF, though, was he still stiff with you in WWF or no?
Oh, that's the part I was going to get to.
Oh, okay.
All the guys didn't know. A lot of them didn't know me too good. Because I had always been in the territories and stuff mostly. I never did really independence. So nobody really knew me. And they're like, they seen the match with me and Poffo against them, Tongas. And he was taking bumps for me everywhere, drop kick, and I mean, everything. He took everything from me. And then after the match, all the guys in the dressing room were like, yeah, somebody must have known somebody doing that kind of favor. I don't even know the fucking guy hardly. He took a beating from him. Yeah, it's like somebody must have known somebody doing those kind of favors. He don't go down for nobody. I was like, oh my God. I think it was Dusty Wolf that said that too. And I was like, it ain't about that. It's about she seen me pay dues, you know. So that was way before that, like 4 years before that, when he did the match and the fucking. I never could figure out. I think I was just getting him madder everything I would do to him when that match Eddie Graham had me do with him. It seemed like everything I did is like made him madder and madder and madder. And it was like, oh my God. I remember being really sore and laying in a whirlpool for a few days after that. But he did a lot of different, I could see like it was a lot of different skills of all different kinds of, you know, type fighting. It wasn't just like sumo, I never seen him do anything at all like that, but it was just like other things, like a lot of kicks and chops, stuff like that with his fingers in it. Real. I can imagine if he was really mad, though, because he was just a little annoyed with me a little bit. But yeah, he gave me a really good match there. And it was on. I can't even find my tape now that I've moved and all that, but it was on YouTube a long time ago. But I wrestled him, and then, okay, the first match I get there, I just got there, and I just was with Billy Jack maybe a year ago at the most, right? Mm-hmm. I go up to him and say, hey, Billy, how you doing? He goes, I don't know you, man. I was like, what the fuck?
Whoa.
Yeah. And I said, I never heard nobody talk this weird about shit. I was just a year before he was, when he was still on WWE TV, everything, you know, Oregon TV, all straight as a board, you know? I was just with him in Portland, like during Christmas or whatever. And I was like, what in the hell? And I said, I just wanted to ask you, I'm Jerry Gray. You know, we were just in Oregon. You know, and he goes, I don't know you, brother. He started getting a little bit mad about it. And I was like, what the fuck? Man, this is kind of weird.
Maybe.
Yeah. But the thing is, that was 1997. He called me almost every day. When was Rip Oliver really ill? And what year was that? Too long ago, like 5 years ago, six.
It was. I don't remember, but yeah.
Okay.
I don't think it was that long ago.
Right, right about that time. But you see, only a year later, he don't even remember me from Portland, and when he was still young and everything.
Wow.
This is like what, four or five years ago?
Yeah.
But the most from now. I mean, that long ago, and he knows me like really good now. Again, I was like, how in the hell? And somebody told me, Billy Two Eagles, remember him? Billy Two Eagles?
Yeah.
Indian wrestler. He told me that when we went out, I went out to Oregon and did some shows of mine before. And I think it was 98. I went out there that I did it. I had used Buddy Rose and Billy Two Eagles, a bunch of those guys, Mike Miller. And then I went to out there again in 2005. I had some big shows out there. But anyway, I always used some of the guys that I knew before. You know, when I'd go out there and do my shows, I would use some of those guys. So Billy Two Eagles goes, I said, last time I seen Billy Jack, he told me that he don't remember me. And he goes, oh, he'll remember you now, Jerry. He's living in the wrestling fans' garages or anything he can find. And I was like,
Right. He did.
I was like, oh my God. That's so weird. I don't know if he was working that or what, but he really acted like he had no idea who I was. I didn't look much different either. One year later. So hey, anyway,
Haku remembered you though, at least.
Yeah, I didn't even go up to him because he's asking nothing either. Most people would be like that, like make sure he remembers me. Oh, pet the bear, you know, the bear's gonna kill you in a few minutes. Like they'd give the bear candy bars or something. Some of the wrestlers would, if they had to wrestle the bear that night, they'd walk by him and give him a cookie bar. I think Dutch Mantel give him candy bars because he knew he was going to wrestle him. Look, make sure you know I'm the friendly face that gave you the candy.
Yes, they're going to be like, oh, I can't hurt this guy. He gave me candy.
That's scary, man. Yeah,
but Billy. The Macho Man, too, right? Up there?
Yeah, that was on WWE. I can't find that one either. It's on YouTube somewhere, but it was in one of their France tapes. It was like, I could hear the commentary. It was from France or whoever does that, you know, Rougeau's and all that. I think it was French though, but I wrestled Macho Man. There's one match, me and Rex King, remember him?
Well done.
Me and him and I against who was it? Nikolai and Boris Sukov. That's one match I never did.
Yeah.
I never even seen that one. And then he was stiff as hell. I remember that. I always wanted to ask him, man, what the hell was my other? I remember you were Jim Nelson. You were didn't even touch him. You're like a maniac when he was Boris.
Yeah.
Nelson. That head, man, he hit you that thing. Jesus. Remember when he was Boris Nelson?
Yeah.
Real early. I'm talking about what he was called.
Wasn't it Private Jim Nelson, I think it was?
Right? Yeah. Oh, Jim Nelson. Even before that, I remember when he first started pretty much. He was against like Ole Anderson. And he was Jim Nelson only. Yeah. Just Jim Nelson. Then he was Private. Yeah, you're right. With that other guy. Who was that other one? Don Carnoodle, Don Carnoodle.
Yep, and then Slaughter, obviously, yep.
Slaughter, yeah. I had to give him the office one time. You know what the office is? Where you squeeze them if they're doing it too stiff? The real old guys knew that.
Oh, yeah, man. Yep.
You're squeezing me too hard, man. Slaughter started doing that thing on me, I mean, all the way. That choke, you know, the Cobra Challenge or whatever it was called. The Cobra like Clutch. '81, they were doing like the Cobra Clutch
Challenge, yep.
Yeah, something like that. I was really young then, and then I came in and he got me in it for real, though. I could feel myself getting ready to go out, and I just squeezed him like that, and he let go real instant. I was like, oh, that does work. Okay. Yeah, I don't know what that was all about. I was like, Jesus. John Studd was really stiff, too, I remember, with that Johnny Valentine forearm of his, but a lot higher up in the air. Ooh. Yeah, but Billy Jack, I've been wanting to find out about him because, like I said, he was on. That was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and he still remembered a lot of the stuff that we did. But sometimes that'd make me think that he wasn't. I don't want to say this in case he calls me or something. But sometimes I think this. I'm not the same person you're talking about for some reason that he's saying to me. And like when I would talk to him, when I would answer the phone, he'd be like, Jerry, I'll come stay with you. And, after Rip Oliver, that happened with him or something. What the hell? You don't do that. Somebody come stay with you, right? When you don't even get two words out, you know.
Shouldn't be getting any calls from him anymore, though, I wouldn't think.
No, I don't anymore. It was right at that time, right, when he was Billy Jack.
But he's in jail, so I don't think he'll be calling anybody.
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's crazy. He never even talked about any wife or anything at that time.
You know what I'm going to bring up to you? So, you were kind of doing jobs in WWF and stuff, but years earlier in Mid-Atlantic, didn't you beat Ric Flair and Flair was going for the title? What's the story behind Ric Flair? Because I know you and Flair had a bunch of matches in like 83 in Mid-Atlantic for JCP while he's about to go for the NWA World title.
I think that was the Oregon. They would always do that. Like the number one or two guy, whatever, would go for like Ric Flair, no matter who it was. Like they had no guys hardly because Billy Jack would be gone somewhere again, you know, WWF or something. That's the only time I remember doing that. I don't know.
Do you remember beating him in Mid-Atlantic in 83?
I don't think it was Mid-Atlantic. I thought it was like Portland TV or something like that. I know it was pretty good. And that year I was out there in Oregon, and then he came out there, Flair did, a couple of times.
What did you think about Flair?
Oh, yeah, I knew him when I was real young. I lived with I was pretty much like heard everything because I lived with Gene Anderson and Jake Roberts for like almost a year. So we had we had all the inside stuff because Gene worked in the office. He was pretty much the system booker, and Dory was kind of the booker, but Jake was pretty much the booker because I couldn't figure it out. It was like I'd have been working maybe a year, and I knew Jake pretty good down in Florida, and he kept saying, when you come up there, man, you should just stay with me and Gene Anderson. And I was like, I wasn't too comfortable with Gene Anderson. I was like, Gene Anderson, they don't seem like too friendly to be wanting to be roommate with. And I was like, but he ended up being a really good, nice guy. But Jake, I did it. And then I actually had my girlfriend with me too. That's the funniest part.
And you're coming together like with all these wacky guys in the history of the business. Gene Anderson, Jake the Snake, Billy Jack Haynes.
I was only 18 too. Like how bad I am.
Even no. Chris Colt, right? I mean, do you Chris Colt back? I mean, you could run into all these crazy guys in the business.
It was so bad. I don't even remember wrestling with Chris Colt. I mean, I didn't even remember wrestling when we were talking about one of the shoot interviews one time. I was like, something about Chris Colt. They go, we see it here on the newsletter. Said the newsletter said Jerry Gray wrestled Chris Colt in Portland and Medford and somewhere like so. It had to happen because it was like a bunch of different towns. And I remember it now because he kept wanting me to ride with them, him in the heel van. I didn't know nothing about him, you know.
Yeah.
He looked like a rough guy, and I didn't know. I thought he was just like a nice guy.
They're doing a documentary about him coming up, actually.
Dark
Side of the Ring. Yeah, they're doing a Dark Side of the Ring.
I like to see that. I usually watch it. I didn't see that advertised. Has it been advertised?
I don't know when it's coming up, but he was on the preview when the season started. He was on it. We'll have his own episode. I don't know when it's going to be, but it's definitely coming up soon.
He was a great worker, too. I know Tom Pritchard always says that, too. But yeah, we were both around him. And then I actually seen him when I was a little kid, and I grew up in Akron, Ohio. So I grew up seeing, he was the, that's one of the only places they ever pushed him, like a big, made him a star and stuff. He was Christopher Colt, and he was the future, I don't know, it was a weird tag team, though, like the future and the past, like a vampire guy, and then Chris Colt was like in the future. 2013 or 26 or something. It was weird. He grew painted his eyes like that weird thing, the Back to the Future and some other weird thing. A lot of stuff he created. I mean, he would, if you think about it, it's like, that's kind of weird. He'd jump off the top rope and nobody did. Back in the rings were made like out of a garden hose and hard as a rock. You could see the ring, how hard it was when he jumped off of it. He'd go on the very top, stand straight. And then it was like horrible rope you could just see. And you hear the boards cracking everything when he jumps. The worst ring you could think of.
Crazy.
But yeah, I see him when I was on like from like 8 years old to probably 12 years old. And then was in the ring wrestling about 8 years later. I never even told him. I don't think I ever told him that even. Only like, let's see. Yeah, 8 years later I was wrestling. Less than that even.
So when were you living with Jake? I didn't want to skip over your time with Jake.
No.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like, what territory was that?
Mid-Atlantic. The biggest one you can be, pretty much, besides WWF and AWA, probably back then.
What was Jake like?
He was a good guy back then, and then just that happens to everybody, I guess. I don't know. We got along really good then, and then, like I said, we were there for like at least 7 months, maybe a year off and on a year, because he went up to be the booker in Atlanta at that time and everything, even. Because I remember he, everybody was telling the Briscoes, because they owned part of Georgia wrestling, you know, at that time.
Yep.
They were telling him that they need to get a better booker. I forget who the booker was then there. That Jake could be a better booker for. And I was like, yeah, we'd ride together, me and the Briscoes. Oh, my God, that's the hell. Go through hell riding with the Briscoes trips when you're first starting. It almost kill you. I didn't even drink. So I didn't even drink because they were telling me, like, oh, yeah, man, I got to have some drinks with them. I was like, oh, my God, I don't drink. And that's on the way to the show. They're saying this, you know, got to have some drinks, man. I don't really drink that much. Like, I smoke weed as much as you want. They were like, okay. Right. That's good. I was like, yeah, because I ain't doing that shit. You can't move as good or anything when you're drunk or something. So we didn't do drinking it after all. I was like, no, I don't want to do that. Well, we did do some car trips. You ever turn of their little trunk, car trips in the trunk? Briscoes, they'd like to get you in the trunk.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Leave you there. Ask Brian Blair.
Like it's a prank.
Oh, yeah. Ask Brian Blair about it. Well, you can't ask Buzz Sawyer. They'd pick on the tough guys, too. So, they put Buzz Sawyer in there, and he still had his clothes off when they were driving down the road, leaving him late at night. I think they came back. I don't know. Nobody liked him too good back then. I don't know. I think they came back and got him. I know they came back and got Brian Blair. They let him for a little while.
Wow, so they would pick on, like, Blair all and Buzz Sawyer, yeah. Tough guys.
Yeah. That's why I said they didn't do it. They did. They got too messed up when they did it to me, though, because I asked Jerry Briscoe when I seen him somewhere about 10 years ago. I said, remember that trunk rib? He goes, everybody was in that trunk, Jerry. He thought I remember. I thought it was mine. I thought mine was one of the only members of the trunk club, but I guess I was. I didn't ask him.
They were going to leave you in there, did you? You didn't get scared.
Oh, I was so young. Yeah, I'm a little bit claustrophobic, too. But I was so young, too, like 18, 19, whatever. And I didn't really know them that good yet. I knew Jack was really tough, amateur. So yep. I knew when they were asking me, I could tell they were filling me out on the way to the trip. I think we were going. I can't even remember where we were going. It was an outdoor show, I remember, because I forgot to wear my shirt. And Crockett back then, like he wanted you to dress, you know, pretty good.
Yes.
And I didn't even wear a shirt, and Jack couldn't quit wearing me the whole time about that. Oh, my God, he's got no fucking shirt. He's going to be fired tonight for sure. There's no way. He can't. Oh, my God, I can't believe he did this. I mean, he was really making it the whole time. Then they act like nothing ever happened when I got there. They forgot about it, yeah. Oh, my God. Anyway, what was I talking about? Something else.
Well, we were talking about the Briscoes and the trip and stuff, but we were initially talking about Jake and Gene and living with them, but that's awesome. I like the rib stories or prank stories because the Briscoes.
Oh my god! Nobody knows much about their ribs either because nobody lives through them. I don't think.
Yeah,
from what I could tell from this show, they still what they did with me. They go okay on the way there. That's when they were saying I get drunk and all this. And I said no, I can't do that, and then so they let me out of that one. You know. But on the way back, they did get me drunk, and they did slip something on my drinks and everything else. And then they go, let's get in the trunk, man, Jerry said to me. And then we'll moon, because Flair and Steamboat or somebody just drove past us and mooned us, I think. Everybody drove back then, you know. Yep. So we drove back to telling stories and all this shit, and then everybody's drinking everything, beer. So then the thing is, the car is packed is why they're all pissed. I didn't want to drive is what it was or something. I forget what it was. I didn't know I was going to have to drive. And they had five people or some shit. So they go, oh, we got Jack, Jerry, Kelly Kaninsky, Jake Roberts, and you, Jerry. There's so five of us in my Cutlass, 72 Cutlass. This is 1982 probably. So it was like not a very big car really for that many guys, especially. So they decided to take Kelly Kaninsky's. I don't even know what it was, a big piece of junk, something. So anyway, we get in that thing, and on the way back is when they say, okay, we'll get drunk now. There's no promoters to see you now. So they start asking me, did you wrestle? This is all a test, you know. They're sitting between me, right? I'm between them, I mean, and they're acting gay and out, gay and all this stuff. Now I'm touching my hair, Briscoe's, right? Yeah. I'm like, you're not going to fool me with this one. I can tell. You guys are not, you know, you're tough guys. Yeah. So anyway, they go, oh, did you wrestle? And they knew all the schools, everything, wherever, no matter what state it was. And I said, yeah, and I knew all their answers. So then, you know, where I wrestled, who, all this stuff. So then they didn't do, they wanted to get me more drugs then or whatever. Give him more shit. He's not quite weak enough yet. Well, you could just tell that they were asking a lot of weird questions. Gene Anderson did the same thing.
Getting you ready for the rib, yeah.
Did you ever wrestle? Did you ever to wrestle you? They always ask you that first thing. You ever been in a fight in this business? Anything like that? They want to know if they first met you, you know? So the Briscoes asked all that. And then they said, let's get in the trunk, Jerry did. I said, I couldn't figure out what the hell we're getting in the trunk, but I was pretty much, you know, I didn't drink at all, so I was pretty much drunk a little. So they go, they started getting ready to get in, and Jerry was like on top of me, pushing down like, hey, we're both getting in like this. And then he tried to push away and push me down. And then all of them had to push. I was fighting so hard. They had to hold down the trunk forever. It took forever. And then they couldn't hold it down hardly. And then they finally got to snap. When that was the end. I thought I was dead then. So great. Then I kept yelling, open the damn trunk. I was getting so mad. You can't breathe.
Oh, no, yeah, plus it's very claustrophobic. Yeah.
Plus it's back in. It's something else in there. What is it, that stuff called? Carbon monoxide or something?
Oh, yeah.
They said back then I could have died. Everybody was getting mad about it. Even Gene Harris, I got mad about that rib. They were like, man, you've been through hell, fucking ribs. Fuck these ribs. And then I was getting so mad. I was thinking of comeback ribs for big shit. Like, I mean, John Grugio type stuff. That really piss you off, you know, when they're just doing it like they know something can happen.
Yeah.
And they're just driving like, turn the radio up, he said. I was telling, turn the damn car over. I mean, pull it over and open the damn trunk. And then they tell me, oh, he said, turn the radio up louder. So right. Then they start turning up real loud. And then it was really annoying anyway. And they pulled over finally, and I was so mad. I wanted to drive. I remember one day in my car, I just started driving, and I went through the scariest, nobody tells that story, but the scariest road car, I mean, trip they ever heard of, had, I bet. I was so mad that I didn't care who it was. I was hitting curbs and everything and running all over the place just to show them some fear. And they were like, come on, you crazy. The Briscoe. They were like, oh my God, this fucking guy, we drive him nuts now. He's going to kill us all. That's what they say every time I drive after that trip, too. Don't drive with him. He'll kill us. Jesus Christ. Anyway, yeah, stuff like that happened. Live with Jake and Gene.
I want to ask you not only just about some of the guys you work with, but what about the spiritual advisor gimmick? I guess it's when you went to Memphis, right? Did you do a gimmick or mega
Tennessee?
What is that gimmick? Is that just because Memphis is wacky, or is that your idea?
No, that was from Oregon, actually. I still lived in Oregon then. And you ever heard of, God, I can't even pronounce his name anymore. Back in 85, he took over a town. He bought the whole town. He made his own spiritual community thing, like from India, a guy.
Oh,
I can't pronounce it. You almost said it. Bhagwan something. I can't remember. It's a weird name. But anyways, Ed Wiskoski, his name is weird enough. Oh, but he's doing that gimmick out there at that time. Yeah. Remember Ed Wiskoski?
Yeah.
He was doing that gimmick then, though. Mega Maharishi, because it was in Oregon. I write that on the news. Everybody was seeing, like, oh my God, these people are taking over. They're doing what's the thing it's called? The thing they did. You know what I'm talking about. The things they just did. Horrible things. 911. That was the first one of those first attacks, they called
terrorists.
It.
Terrorists. Yeah. Terrorist attacks. Yeah.
That was one of the first ones, though, on the news and everything. So he was doing that gimmick. And the people didn't really notice it yet too much. It wasn't getting a lot of heat. But for some reason, Dutch Mantell and Dundee, I rode with them all the time, every night in Oregon. and I mean, in what you call it, Mid-South. I always rode with them for some reason. They were the bookers in Mid-South. He was Dundee. And then we went to Tennessee, and they were going to be the booker over there, him and Dundee together, Dutch Mantel. So then Dundee, I mean, and Motel, both of them kept saying, go to the library, man, and study, you know, being a Hare Krishna and do that gimmick when we get up there. You know, you're going to be the Mega Maharishi. And but I'm like, I wasn't too into it, really. I was just like, talk to Dutch anymore or not?
Once in a while, yeah.
Okay. I thought you did some kind of podcast with him or somebody.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I still talk to him once in a while.
Yeah, because he was the booker. He'd know really what even made him think of that, because it was like we're going to Tennessee, nowhere near where all this stuff's happening. I don't even know if world news was, well, I guess it was, but not that big like it is now. So, yeah, I just did the gimmick. But the only reason I'm about not staying there was the money. The money they paid. Because even Mid-South was paying way better than them at that time. And I left there.
Oh, yeah.
I left.
That's always the thing everyone says about Memphis.
I know.
Not great paydays.
No. I got not bad, but it was too late. By the time he wanted to be not bad, it was Jerry Jarrett. And I just got so pissed one day. I got a check. I was supposed to give Coco Beware, stick a thing in a voodoo doll, and he was going to fall down on TV or something.
Yeah.
That's what I heard. I was getting ready to do this gimmick, and then I just went on back to Florida after I was on the way to TV that day or something. And then Jarrett said, I said something about I need my lax, because they always keep your last week's money if you quit or whatever. So I said, I need my last week's money for one thing. And he sent that money. And that would have been more than probably twice a week I'd make with him normally. And I was like, oh, yeah, all right, he's going to give me nothing when I get back up there. Give me a good, nice and good payday right now, and then yeah. I'll get him back now. But anyway, yeah, I was up there for about a month, maybe. Month.
Yeah, what a funny gimmick. Yeah,
jeez. Oh, God. It was weird. And they were scared of it. And Frank Morrell, remember him?
Yeah.
Frank Morrell, he said he'd been there for years, like a big star there, the Mighty Yankees and stuff. He said that that was one of the most over first heel appearances he ever seen in the Memphis Coliseum. Me and I forget who I wrestled, maybe Lawler, I don't remember. I don't think it was Lawler, though. That's why I was really stunned when he said it. I was having some good matches with Wendell Cooley. Remember when he was Rick Casey?
Yep.
Wendell Cooley. With him, we were having some really good ones, and Lawler, and they was having me beat Jerry Jarrett, the owner, right? Having me beat him and Tojo Yamamoto and everybody every night, because they were going to get that gimmick over big, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like, what the fuck is this pay? Give me these wins like this? Jeez, people would look at the newsletter thing, Eddie Gilbert, Jesus Christ, you beat... I'd be with, he'd always crack me up, Eddie Gilbert, because he always read all the newsletter thing.
Yeah.
I'd be like in Oregon, and I'd come to Mid-South, and he'd be reading that. I thought you were just in Oregon. I didn't know you were beating Ed Muskowski, beating the regular everybody. I'm like, oh, I didn't talk none about it. I don't know. And he was so funny. He'd be like, I didn't know you'd been that big in Oregon. He'd be reading the newsletters. Then Memphis, he said, oh, my God, that'd be good to give it for you, crazy. Weird guy, like almost missing link. If I'm the guru, you know, they call me the guru too. That's why I can't figure out why. All of a sudden, Dundee wanted to take the gimmick over, kind of. And he wanted me to be his guru, like Jerry Lawler had a kind of like a guru type, and Andy Kaufman did. So I think that's why Dundee wanted to be his guru, because it was called his guru after that, pretty much. I was on the Jerry Lawler show one time too. That was really good. Because it's the only time they ever let me talk. And I rehearsed a bunch of stuff out of his Bible, like Guru's Bible. And it was like weird as crap. It freaked everybody out. But Lawler and all them were like, holy crap, we got to do that. What you call it? Dundee's mansion. Do that video. Because I said I have 112 methods to meditate. The first ones to go to a cemetery at midnight to meditate on death. And I was making all kinds of weird eyes and stuff like before the Undertaker did. And I was saying that, and the weird raspy voice. And they were like, what the fuck was that? And then Jerry Dundee said, yeah, we'll get my limo and do that video. My limo, go to the cemetery at midnight and do that video and get this gimmick over.
Yeah,
I should have stayed there, really. But they should have gave me money before. Oh, stupid.
Yeah, you weren't getting paid. Yeah,
it was horrible. One night just said Midnight Coliseum. There was a lot of people there yelling at me, even like weird. You could tell they were kind of weird too, like the people. Because I was with Walk Out with Dutch. I remember the people were like, looking at me kind of weird, and they were, and I did the thing they did to me, and he goes, don't listen to him. Like he was, I don't know if he was scared or what. He didn't like the noise they were making or something. I don't know. Right. But I was like, I thought it's kind of cool, man, to have somebody. Never seen people like that. Somebody wrote me out.
Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, I was just going to say at the end, that was some lady. I don't know. I didn't think she was, I thought she was a wrestling fan, but I guess not. At the end, she wrote me some kind of weird letter, like real long, telling me not to be things that I'm, act like things that I'm not, you know, and all this stuff.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of made me think a little bit, like, what the heck is going on in this place? So,
for sure, yeah. So, as we hit the wind down here, we head towards the finish. Just a couple of quick hitters. What was your favorite territory? Because I know you worked pretty much all of them.
Yeah, I know. That's why. So, I'd say probably only Florida, because that was my home too. Growing up, watching all these guys, and they end up being my friends, you know, Florida, but for the fun and stuff, Oregon. There's so many, though. They're so similar.
Who was your favorite opponent?
Oh, God. There was a lot of them around the same year. It's like me and Eddie Gilbert, Great Muda, Ric Flair, people like that. Great Muda. I had a lot of matches with him because he came to Florida at first when he first, you know, wanted to learn the American style and everything.
Yep.
So he was like the... I had some good matches with him once he got from being so stiff. God, he tried to kill me at first when he was young. Bill Alfonso said, don't be so stiff with the young boy. Jerry Gray's got to stretch your ass.
Do you have favorite matches as well, like a favorite match?
Matches? Yeah, I did have some. Like, fans used to send me a lot of tapes of, like, the matches in their territories and stuff. I had a lot of good ones. I can't really see who the other guy is, but I thought one of them I like just because of the crowd and the noise and everything. I took a reverse monkey flip from, we were just talking about his name. What was his name? Wendell Cooley. And his partner was somebody, I can't remember who, but it was from the Superdome. That's why I like it. The crowd's real loud and it gives me that big bump real high. He was the one that gave me the bump, Wendell Cooley. But that was one of my favorite. I like that, but I like more with I had with Eddie Gilbert in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then he was a babyface, is why I like that one really good. I like being a heel better. I remember Ted DiBiase would always come out and watch our match. Me and that he wasn't involved with either one of us at all, you know. So would Flair too. Yeah, I remember that was like a compliment. Compliment of all, you know, with a champion or somebody at the top guy would come out and watch your match. Abdullah used to watch mine. You're a hell of a worker, baby. Hell of a worker, baby.
They were loving the Golden Boy. They were loving watching your matches. You must have been doing something right.
It was stunning. Like, because some people like Abdullah the Butcher. I grew up watching him. I was a little kid. I was scared to death of him halfway still. But he was so nice. I was just like, what the heck? I don't like that. He's talking like, hey, how you doing, baby? I forget what he was calling me, baby or father or something. Father, I think graduated later. Somebody else was champ. Mick Foley was champ, I think. He called me father for some reason. Father. Father. Yeah, I can't remember that. I'll be like, I'm a little kid, man. Jesus.
Crazy, crazy Abby. But before I let you go, do you do social media at all? Do you do any of that type of stuff or not?
I'm on Facebook, but I can't figure out. What you call the other one too good yet still. After I moved, my laptop's not working very good at all, but I have Facebook, just my name, Facebook.
And not really keeping up with the current wrestling, though. You're not really a fan of the current business.
I try to record it in case I can't handle it, you know, but the AEW,
yeah,
because I like when they show like older guys sometimes, but Have they ever even showed a Ric Flair interview yet, or have they?
He's been there, not obviously not wrestling, but he's been like managing and promos and stuff. Yeah.
Has it been?
He's been okay. Yeah.
It's not. They don't make it like special enough, though, are they? Or does that make it just like?
Yeah, it's weird. Like they could make it more special, but it's not.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
The booking is strange. The creative is odd.
Kind of TNA, like where they don't. Everybody's been there, but nobody cared when they were, you know, like Hulk Hogan, everybody with TNA. Yeah. And but it was they ruined their name, kind of. So, I still do, like I said, a lot of any kind of questions anybody has, like about old wrestling, like the stuff we were just talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
I love talking about all that.
Territory interviews.
I'm sure. Tell Tom to listen to that one. He might like some of that story. I always seem to remember a few more than some people for some reason.
Yeah, now I got to tell him he's got to start remembering some of this stuff.
Yeah, he just fakes like he can't remember. He's a worker.
Yeah, that's
true. He's working everything.
Well, Mr. Gray, thank you so much for all the time. Really appreciate it.
Oh, I thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking about all the old times, my friend.
This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.